This episode of the Big 5D podcast is brought to you by Realm Digital. Realm empowers industry leaders through innovative business solutions. Please visit them at realmdigital.com. That's REALMdigital.com. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big 5D podcast. I'm joined by Zane Stenning from Mia Health Technologies. Did I get that right, Zane?
Hey, all spot on, Charles. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks for joining us. Those of you who attended our conference in Cape Town in March may remember Zane from a panel on Fourth Industrial Revolution that to hear from Savant, I say Savant, he's always correcting me to say Savant, which is a more of an American pronunciation, to be honest. But you were on this panel about 4 hours, which is basically connected technologies driving interesting things in Africa. So tell us, just let's start out with the basics. Who are you? What's your background? Very, very briefly. And then we'll get into what Mia does, and then we'll get into why it's doing it. Let's just take it from there.
Amazing, Charles. Yeah, well, first off, a great honor to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And yeah, super excited to chat about what we're building here in the tip of Africa. I actually started off as a medical doctor by profession. I studied medicine at university, but I've been an entrepreneur my whole life with an import bicycle business and a construction business. So I've always leaned into that, like sort of finding stuff that can scale and grow. And now I'm just merging those two passions, which is healthcare and business together.
Okay, there's a couple things there real quick. I'm always curious when people say they're lifelong entrepreneurs. What was the first thing and how old were you?
Sure. Well, I started working at around the age of 13 and then my first business around the age of 16, which was import-export of like bicycle parts. I remember growing up not having a lot of cash, but always wanting the latest stuff. And then like locally, there was just such high margins on it. So I was like, let's just bring it myself, started selling it to friends, family, etc. And then my next business was at Varsity, where myself and a fellow colleague that was also studying medicine at the time actually just stumbled across all of these entrepreneurs in the construction sector who had massive contracts from big corporates, but no financial backing, no business acumen to deploy the contracts. And we just stepped in, helped them raise financing, helped them deploy their contracts, and grew the business from there.
So did you exit that business? Did you close that business down? What was the outcome of that business?
Well, so we actually ran that business from second year until fifth year. And it got a bit crazy. You can't tell my university this, but we were bunking class to like fly to science.
They might listen. But we'll
yeah, so we're literally like having to bunk class, fly to sites and check what's going on in our projects. And eventually, as the business hit its hockey stick, our marks did the exact opposite. So in final year, mid-final year, we had to make a decision, like, are we actually going to leave Varsity and just pursue this, or are we going to finish our degrees? And after long debates, my co-founder and I, we decided, like, all unfinished work, like, let's just give that to the client for free. And then as soon as we graduate, we come back and just restart straight away. So that's what we did. And then when we graduated, COVID hit. So construction in our country absolutely dried up. And then in those years, I founded Mia. So there was no going back.
Okay. So Mia is a COVID baby of sorts.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's pivot to Mia. Won't ask about too much about med school, but just real quick, did you actually practice medicine for any period of time?
Yes,
I did. Or did you jump right into entrepreneurship? Okay, go ahead.
I graduated at the end of 2019, and my first year of practicing was 2020. So I was working at Groote Schuur, which is one of the biggest hospitals here in the Western Cape, and ended up being a part of the COVID high care team for the majority of the pandemic, and ended up being actually the spokesperson for the COVID high care team as well.
Okay, that must have been fun.
It was a real eye-opener. It was intense.
Okay, maybe that's another podcast.
A whole other podcast. Yeah,
I think it could be actually. Maybe we'll do that, but not today. Yeah. So talk about the pivot to Mia, and then let's get into what it is, and then get into why it exists.
Amazing. Yeah. So, during COVID, obviously markets were crashing around the world, and I luckily had liquidated all of my positions, so I was ready to jump back in. And that's when I came across Align Technologies, which is the founding company of this clear aligner technology. And I just wanted to find out more about this product.
Is that like Invisalign? I mean, is that similar?
Exactly. Yes. So,
okay.
Align Technologies is the company that owns Invisalign.
Okay.
And when we came across that, I was like, sure, this is an incredible product. Well, how has it not like penetrated our market here in SA? And it's like for multiple reasons, like a weaker currency, multiple middlemen to get it here. It just pushes the prices like through the roof. And when I looked into what does it take for us to actually manufacture this, like a 3D printer setup is what we needed. So then it came to like, okay, well, can additive manufacturing solve a massive healthcare burden on our continent? And for those of you who don't know, Africa has the highest rates of malocclusion, which is skewed teeth, in the world, at a whopping 89%.
And that has health consequences down the line, right? It's not just cosmetic.
No, 100% not. So it, like, obviously, if you're depending on the degree at which you have this like, skewed teeth, you're going to have issues with being able to clean your teeth, oral hygiene, more than that, issues with your temporal and mandibular joints, chronic headaches, all this sort of stuff. And I don't know if you know this, but like people with poor oral health tend to have a 50% increased risk of cardiovascular disease as well as metabolic diseases as well. So oral healthcare, and what I've learned in starting Mia, is that oral healthcare is such a wide effect on our healthcare, not just oral healthcare, but global health and well-being as well.
Okay. Okay. So you kind of take us through the next few steps of how the business evolved.
Awesome. Yeah. So we first said, can we manufacture? Is it realistic? And can we do it at a price that is achievable for our markets and achieve this mass scale? And we ticked those boxes. But next it came to distribution. And that was one of the hardest things that we ran into in our previous businesses. So it was something I was like sort of ready and waiting to try and solve. But we bootstrapped all of this. So we didn't have massive capital to either spend on marketing, marketing teams, all this sort of stuff. So we needed to sort of keep distribution in-house at the beginning just to do our product dev and all this sort of stuff. And that's when we were like, well, if we can't do fixed practices all over the place, let's just go mobile. You know, like let's do an orthodontic clinic that can go to schools, wherever it needs to go, and treat all these patients and run our aligners through this clinic.
And by mobile, you mean driving around in a van,
literally,
right?
Literally. Yeah, yeah. So we bought a Ford Transit, put it in the basement, and we started converting it. Like the team sat inside there, put a chair around, moved it around, and solved each problem as we treated like a patient in this clinic until we got to something that we could launch, you know? And then we launched it, and in our massive inexperience, we just had not enough advertising support to drive the aligner sales. Like our market's not educated on it, so the users have no idea it exists, let alone that they can afford it. But luckily, in that time, our revenue from the mobile dentistry just servicing schools and corporates was going up. So we're like, okay, perfect. Pivot to mobile dentistry, upsell the aligners through the clinic. But then we became a dental practice basically, because we weren't actually just scaling aligners anymore. We're just doing dental treatments.
So the aligners, is it still core to the business, or has that become kind of secondary to it?
So we actually now, maybe I'll get to it just now as well, but they are still fundamental, and they have, aligners are fundamental to achieving orthodontic care for our continent, period. There's no way that we can scale orthodontic care across Africa without aligners. So just to give you like some numbers to put this in context, we have 64 million people in South Africa, and we have 170 orthodontists. So with
that doesn't seem like a lot. Yeah.
With a malocclusion rate of 89%, like there is literally, there's simply no way that we're going to be able to treat those people. So the only way that we can distribute the skill of orthodontists to treat all those people is by bringing the orthodontist central and distributing the care.
Does this, the liners, essentially obviate the need for trained orthodontists? Can someone with more generalized training apply this and solve the problems the same as a highly trained orthodontist? Would explain how that scales.
You're touching on a very pertinent point across all of healthcare with advents of AI and all of these distributed technologies, is that what happens to the practitioner? And I really don't think that we'll ever lose the practitioner in like this health treating journey.
Well, if there's only 170 of them, I'm not sure how much at risk they are, but you know.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, so from an orthodontic point of view with clear aligners, I don't think we're going to lose that orthodontist touch. The ability to be able to assess a patient, assess the scans, the x-rays, and just do sort of that clinical overview, it's needed. But instead of having to sit in your clinic and see 10 to 20 patients a day, you can now review information at your leisure and do triple the quantities, you know?
Well, that's what I'm. I feel like that's what the opportunity is here, and let's get into how the tech, what technology is enabling that.
Exactly.
So let's just go with that.
Well, we actually, so when we pivoted to the mobile dentistry, we then realized that, okay, we need a software to stitch all of this together now because everything is becoming a lot more complex. Claim from health insurers, manage patient notes, let the patients book, communication, all this sort of stuff. And we, or coming from medicine, like we have so much to choose from. If you want to run an ER or if you want to run like a specific unit in the hospital, I just thought that dentistry would have like, you know, everything to offer in like one vertically integrated product, but there isn't that. So we started having to patch together lots of different softwares just to run one business. And then eventually we just said, this is crazy. Like we just need to build our own thing, even if it's just to scale our own business, let alone sell it to other dentists or dental groups. So that's when we started putting together our app. And what our app really is, it's a specialized ERP for the dental industry. It's meant to run a patient.
So this is the product. This is the product.
This is the product, really. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So the mobile dentistry is a way for you to establish what you're doing, but it's not the the ultimate application of what you want to do. The ultimate application is giving others the ability to run their business, their dentistry practices more efficiently using your app. Is that correct me at any point?
So, like, we've now learned every element of this. We're a young found, or a relatively young founding team, I suppose. When we started this, we were all 24. So we didn't have like a mass of assets. Like,
not to do the math, but what is your founding date? You said 2019-ish? I forget.
2021, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay, everybody out there, you can figure out how old he is now.
So we didn't have tons of assets behind us at that stage to just pour into the startup. So we had to go through financing, raising commercial debt, raising VC financing, all of this sort of stuff. And let alone that, we've like established clinics, we've had to deal with patients, like change the way dentistry is brought to people at their homes, at their offices, at their schools. So we've had to redesign lots of elements of dentistry, and we're getting like a really good feel for it. And for young dentists coming out of varsity now, or university, there's the market's saturated. Like interest rates are up, means that lending is expensive. You don't have easy access to patients. You need a new model to be able to penetrate these markets. And that's exactly what like our service in its entirety will do. Whether it is the clinic that you need, whether it is just the software, whether it's the financing, or whether it's the lab that goes with your clinic, it's going to be a full service.
So it's hard to launch a dentistry practice, yet there's incredible demand for it, right?
Well, you know what happens is that all of the dentists who want to run profitable practices flock to urban areas. So your urban areas are like super concentrated, having a dentist on almost every corner. And if you want to penetrate that market, because obviously you also want to run a profitable business, it's almost impossible to penetrate it and actually like take users away from other dentists. But with our model, like with the mobile clinics at least, we actually are bringing a whole new market into the dental field.
Just so I understand, if I am, let's say I'm just graduating, becoming qualified to practice dentistry, I can come to you and you can help me set up a practice using the mobile clinic and your software? Explain that just so I'm understanding it correctly.
Yeah, we are actually like a full end-to-end service. So we've negotiated very cheap finance for the dentists, with also very little like onerous clauses on them in terms of like having the collateral and like putting up personal surety and all this sort of stuff, because our clinics all integrate into our business model. So we pitch our business model to funders, and then the funders fund our dentists directly. So they get cheap financing, they get a fully designed clinic that's ready to go, no learning curves, and the software stitches all of that together with accounting and et cetera.
Okay. So you fit into a lot of blank-tech categories, don't you?
Yes. No, we're all over the
health
place.
Health tech, fintech. Okay, yeah.
This is like three startups in one, but luckily we have the team to do it.
Okay. So backing up, one of the things that in this conversation struck me is there's an affordability problem with dentistry, right? Mm. Just our access to how and kind of talk about that problem a little bit and how, if at all, to be honest, you're addressing it, because it seems like not a problem one small startup can solve, but talk about that.
No, definitely not. Listen, we're fighting against like really big headwinds to do this. And this problem, like in South Africa, we have a very developed healthcare sector in the private sector. Obviously, our government sector needs a lot of work and support. But our private healthcare sector is analogous to like most developed worlds. So number one thing is that your rates are governed by medical aids. So like it's almost crazy to see what most insurers are allowing dentists to claim for such a highly specific skill set, you know. So that's number one. And we can't solve that. Like it's going to be years for legislation, working with these corporates, etc., to get healthcare rates changed for the practitioner. And you have to remember that at the end of the day, this is a full human business. Like you have a patient on the one side with their anxieties, their own healthcare, their perception around healthcare that we need to treat like with care and look after. But then you also have the dentist, who themselves is an individual who's gone through med school, amassed debt to be able to do that, studied for all these years, and now has the skill that they need to deploy and earn a decent living from, you know? So we needing to solve these very human problems at all of these different stages. So by optimizing business model and efficiency, we can help solve the dentist problem of profitability, even fighting these sort of larger headwinds. And also with custom mass manufacture, we're able to bring down the costs of these treatments, which means that dentists are also able to be more profitable by broadening the market that they're able to offer this to, but also being profitable on those products themselves. So at each stage, it's a super... I've only like done two other businesses, and they were fairly simple ones compared to this. But I think building in the healthcare space, whether it's tech, deep tech, services, whatever it is a very, very complex endeavor. I think it's one of the hardest, but I might just be biased, you know?
Well, you found it difficult, and I haven't talked to anyone who says it isn't. So, okay, fair enough. So let's talk. You know, you were at the conference talking about 4IR, and we haven't really sort of applied that phrase to what you're doing, but kind of talk about the connected technology element to this and where that comes in, why it's important.
Sure.
Just kind of help us understand that.
I mean, it's fundamental to almost every element of this business, whether you're looking to optimize patient outcomes, whether you're looking to catch disease early, whether you're looking just to improve your like communication with your patients. Like I can even just ask you, Charles, like, do you remember what your dentist last said to you about your oral health? Not really.
The answer is no. Yeah. I mean, I could guess what it was, but, you know, I don't remember what it was. Yeah.
100%.
Something about flossing, I would imagine.
You better be flossing, Charles, if you're talking to me. But so that's like, that was one of the first things that we actually sought to optimize is just patient comms. Like dentists take down really detailed patient treatment notes. But number one, you can't share that with the patient because they're not going to understand what that's all about. And the dentist doesn't have time to be able to translate all of that. So a simple large language model that can translate that. But obviously, we have to take care of patient information problems. And
you
stuff
get a like lot that. Of privacy issues.
Exactly. Yeah.
Compliance issues there. Yeah.
Something as simple as that, like at the beginning, I literally sat and I was just literally manually like translating dentist notes into like a patient communication portal. And then obviously with the advent of ChatGPT, like it just made it so easy for me just to put a template down. That's when I was like, okay, hold on. If AI can literally solve, and it was a huge problem. Like patients like, oh, that's what the dentist was talking about. Oh, now I fully understand. Or the next time they come like, oh, remember you told me about this the last time? And then you can see how this technology is just evolving something as simple as patient communication.
A model that takes, you know, the notes that only a dentist can understand and turns it into instructions or at least something for the patient to consume and then understand about how they need to take care of their oral health going forward.
Well,
something,
you know,
like that.
Exactly. And educating the patient is just so fundamental. If you know what the problem is, you are able to address it. But more than that, like, let's say, for example, you're traveling, you're in Cape Town and something happens, you arrive at the dentist says, what happened on this tooth the last time? You're like, I have no idea. Just fix it. You know, and now you can at least say this.
You're
from
the dentist.
Exactly. Precisely. So that's one of the small places that, like this tech has made a huge difference. But we're looking to really automate and bring as much machine learning into the dental space, and then possibly even into the larger healthcare industry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's spend the last few minutes we're chatting, kind of what you just said, applying it to the big. How do you see the bigger problems being solved with the technology you were just talking about? Kind of what do the next few years look like to you if all of this is deployed the way you'd love to see it deployed?
You know, I think that artificial intelligence is really just going to revolutionize the healthcare industry. The one thing that I think is paramount is early detection. Early detection is better than a cure. You know, if you catch right. cancer before it becomes cancer, you don't have any issues, you know. And what's amazing is that like if we can optimize the way that we receive data from patients, the rate, the frequency, how we analyze it, how we are transforming that into actionable treatments, that's going to transform everything. You know, if we can decrease the incidence of an illness, it means that all the massive of infrastructure that we need to build to treat cancer or to treat whatever that illness is then falls away. And that's what really where the burden of healthcare is. It's like building these massive assets that all require debt to fund or some other financial instrument that needs to be serviced. The highly skilled practitioner whose services at the moment can't be scaled, so I think by being able to scale the highly specialized skill to a broader market, or at least be able to optimize that skill. Like, for example, with radiology, like they're able to fly through MRIs and that a lot quicker than what they used to be. So optimizing or scaling the skill and then bringing down the cost of healthcare, I think it's going to change the world.
So summarizing, AI is key to driving down healthcare costs, which are too high pretty much everywhere, you know.
100%. And I think like lots of doctors, when they hear this, they get very uppity about
start to sweat a little bit,
right? A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So talk about that. Why should they not fear this? Why should they embrace it?
Yeah.
Because that's always the question with AI, you know, no matter what you're talking about.
Because I think that it doesn't matter how many med schools we have or how easily we end up being able to train these practitioners, they are just never going to be enough to treat the population. You look at first world countries that have huge deficits in the number of practitioners that are needed to effectively manage their population. So I think will it affect those practitioners who are earning exorbitantly high fees? Yes, it will, but not to a level where they become middle class, even. They're still going to be upper middle class. They're still going to earn well. But now their reach is going to be massive. Their impact will be huge. And that's really what you want from a healthcare provider. Yes, you want them to be gainfully employed and to the fee that approximates their skill, which is high. But you also want them to have impact on their patients, you know, and the more patients they impact, the healthier our society will be.
It just seems like if AI can help one doctor help 100 people instead of 10 people, right?
Yes.
That is the concept, then. I'm not sure that a qualified practitioner should fear that. They should embrace it because they can have more impact and still not live next to a postal clerk, you know, or whatever. Whatever their biggest fear is. Yeah.
Whatever their biggest fear is. But, you know, I think that there's so many other barriers to entry to get around. First of all, like even if you had to like imagine this AI company that comes out to replace every doctor, like the rate of litigation against that company will be insane. Like, you know, it's like almost like what the healthcare system does is they've like distributed litigation to this network of doctors so that even if one gets taken out, everyone will be okay. But you can, and we've seen this recently, I can't remember what the name of that Clear Aligner business in the States was, but they had to file for Chapter 11 because they were receiving so many lawsuits from their it was one of the elements, you know, so the cash from that is huge. So
that is a nonstop conversation in U.S. healthcare, which is litigation and litigiousness and
so
et cetera.
I think that it would almost be short-sighted for a startup to come and say, cool, we're replacing the doctor, the dentist, the physio, whatever it is, because you're going to open yourself up to a world of litigation, whether your patients like you or not, you know.
But I guess ultimately, what is the real need and what is the real solution? Whether or not they're going to be sued out of existence is almost secondary to that question, right? I mean,
no, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let's kind of wrap up with a little bit about where you think you're going to take this business in the next few years and what kind of resources you're going to need to scale it the way you think it needs to be scaled. And then, you know, who are your logical partners going forward?
No, 100%. So in the short term, so we base obviously in Cape Town, the tip of Africa. So we're scaling to
one of my favorite places, as you know. I think.
Dude, we are so privileged to live here. I love this country. I love that. Yeah, we are so, so lucky to be here. But yeah, so we're scaling to all of our neighboring countries at the moment, launching clinics, launching our aligners, getting into the hands of dentists and patients all across sub-Saharan Africa. And then over the next 18 months, we're looking to launch in Europe first, as we have a strategic partner who's also an investor there as well to help with distribution. Mm-hmm. And then once we're ready to open our software product out to dentists who aren't in our network, then yeah, we'll go to whichever countries have like the best regulations to help us scale the fastest. Obviously,
yeah. You know. So expanding into Europe, that strikes me as I don't claim to know the European healthcare system well, or at all, really, other than I know that it's mostly single payer, right? I don't know if it's every country, but that's a common occurrence. Mm. I don't think Germany is, but correct me at any point. Because, you know, you're dealing in sub-Saharan Africa with one clear set of challenges. It's a very different set of challenges in Europe. How do you make that transition to from an sub-Saharan African market to a Western European market?
Well, you know, so in our context, obviously cost is everything. And that's something that we've been able to address to a large extent. We're still working hard to see like what model iterations we can make in this business to really reach as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, like our private healthcare market here is very developed. So lots of what we're solving for, lots of the issues that we're having to solve and problems that we're solving in our startup are almost directly replicable in the first world markets. So really in the first world markets, the problem that we're removing from what we've solved already is cost. We still have very, very low utilization rates of basic dental care. So getting into the dentist for your 6-monthly checkup and cleaning, x-rays, right, et cetera. Very high
utilization. Universal challenge, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Very high utilization rates of fillings, crowns, veneers, all that sort of stuff. So that is problem number one, you know. So healthcare insurers, governments who are spending on – and the cost of dentistry skyrockets after you leave that sort of basic dental care is like zone. So bringing down – once again, prevention is key. So making it easier to access the dentist, making it easier to address a problem. So in healthcare, we have called this limit of anxiety. So when you're a patient, you experience a symptom. You don't always call the doctor or the dentist depending on what you're feeling. You might be like, I'll take a paracetamol or whatever the story is and see what happens. But we all at one point will reach this limit of anxiety where now this symptom is getting enough for me to actually take action, phone and make an appointment. So if we can bring down that limit of anxiety, make care more easily accessible at home, work or school, etc., there we already are aiming to bring down that burden of healthcare spend. And yeah, so that also speaks to like who our likely partners and funders will be. So in our country, we call them medical aid schemes, but big healthcare insurers in countries and areas where you have government-based healthcare, partnering with them. And then funders, we're looking to like sort of grow with distribution partners, which is similar to what we're going to be doing in Europe as well. So key partners who might be funding us, may not be, but are already working into our market, already have clients that we can service, work with them and get access to those markets that way.
All right, great. Well, Zane, we're going to have to end it there, but thank you so much for telling us about Mia and what you guys are doing, problems you're solving. Interesting stuff. And thanks again for joining us.
Lovely stuff, Charles. Thank you so much for having me, man. I look forward to the next one.
All right, great. This podcast is produced, written, and hosted by me, Charles Laughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Big 5 Digital. If you're interested in participating in the podcast as a sponsor or guest, please reach out to us at info@big5digital.org. That's info@big5digital.org. Thanks for joining us, and see you next time.